It's time now for a CHASM Full Service Local Radio special feature. That's Straight Talk with Brian Sussman, brought to you by KRP Sedona. Conservative talk radio for free thinkers in Northern Arizona. Stimulating, intriguing, inspiring, and sometimes provocative topics. Every Friday morning following the 8 a.m. news right here on 780 KAZM. And now, Straight Talk with Brian Sussman.
Well, good morning to you. It's Brad Sussman in for my brother Brian. We're just really glad that you're with us today. Kind of a different show we're going to do today. Cara, I'm glad you're here as well. Kind of walk us through what we're going to do today, because this is kind of totally a different thing.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve day, Christmas Eve morning, and yes. I thought it would be terrific to take a break from politics. You know, we'll talk about that, but so we wanted to showcase, you know, one of our most interesting people in Sedona and his music. So we're going to talk about, and I'll let you introduce him, but we're going to talk about the Chapman Stick. And we're going to hear some of it, and it's going to be very cool for a different kind of show. So this week and next week, we're doing something different. No politics, just family, food, and faith.
Well, and that's the great thing. You know, we've got the holidays upon us. I don't know how many people had wrestling matches during Thanksgiving when they started talking politics with family. I know in a lot of places it erupts in alcohol and gunplay. but, you know, Christmas is going to be different. Let's just make this kind of a non-political time. There's so much out there in the world. There's so much trouble. There's so much strife, but there's so much good in the world as well. And that's what the holiday season should bring out in all of us. Carl, what was your favorite memory of your childhood and Christmases?
Well, Brad, as your brother Brian remembers, from a big Italian family. You were, you know, I think older at that point. So you were probably weren't around. Brad or Brian was best friends with my brother, Carl. And I know that Brian was at our house several Christmases in a row. But my, you know, our family memory is Christmas Eve doing the Feast of the Seven Fishes. I mean, it's a 6-hour extravaganza of cooking and eating. And there are, you know, 5 courses served. Each course, you do the dishes after each course. It's, you know, timing, it's preparation, it's everybody. We used to have like 23, 25 people around the table, the kids' tables. And the tradition in Italy is to have 7 fishes for, you know, the 7 sacraments or the 7 deadly sins or whatever.
Right.
But our family evolved it into one beef tenderloin and 5 fishes, because not everybody eats fish.
Right, exactly.
So you make it fit for your family and your area of the country. I was from Chicago, so that's what we did. Christmas Eve is just so special a time for family that I just couldn't even bear the thought of doing politics on Christmas Eve.
No, you really can't. We don't need to do that. This is going to be a fun show, and we'll talk about that. You know, Brian and I had kind of interesting upbringing, just the two of us, with mom and dad, because, mom was strict Lutheran. She grew up in northern Minnesota, and church going twice a week, the whole bit. So Christmas was a big deal for her. When she was in her 20s, she and one of her best friends went cross country from their little small town in northern Minnesota all the way out to Los Angeles, because they were both nurses and they heard that's where the jobs were. So these two women in their 20s get on the train, go westward, and they end up in Los Angeles. Well, my mom remained a very strict Lutheran for the longest time, because her best friend was with her, and they found a church, and then they eventually found jobs. And my mom went to work for a guy by the name of Dr. Bergeson, who it turned out was my dad's best friend. And my dad had just finished up with a divorce, and my mom had just finished up with a divorce, hence the reason she moved out of Minnesota, just wanted to get away from things. And Doc Bergeson said, hey, you know, I should fix these two up. And it was at that time, after meeting my father, my mom found out that Saturday nights were a lot more fun than Sunday mornings. And so the church kind of went by the wayside for a while. And my dad really didn't have much of a religious upbringing. His mother died when he was very young. He came from a Jewish family. And so his two older sisters raised him. And they didn't know much about the traditions of Judaism. Their father was an entrepreneur and traveled all over the United States. So these two older girls, and they were about 12 and 15 years older than my father, they raised my dad and his little brother. So what they did is they took on the traditions that their friends had.
Yeah.
And all their friends in Southern California were Christians, Catholics. So they learned about Christmas. So my dad, from a very young age, celebrated Christmas. Well, the problem was they couldn't celebrate Christmas when dad would come home because dad was a strict Jew. And so they had to like hide the Christmas tree in the closet. And so they were kind of closet Christmas people for a while. But then eventually my grandfather, you know, relented and he didn't have time to really teach him the religion. He taught him what he could. But so we grew up with Christmas and it was a big deal around the house. And yeah. Always I remember just a big traditional nice dinner we'd have on Christmas Eve, and then we'd open some presents. Then the next morning we'd open the really special presents,
exactly.
And it was just a lot of fun. And,
same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You open some the night before,
right.
And then the next day that's the big presents. It was just a lot of fun. But what I found very interesting is that my dad, one year, and I think I was in high school, figured out something. He figured out that the movie theaters were open on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And you could go to a movie on Christmas and no one was there. So we'd always figure out what movie we're going to go see. And we'd have a nice big breakfast. And you know, growing up in the North Shore of Chicago,
yeah.
Christmas Day, if you wanted to go get anything you needed at the store or whatnot, you'd go into Highland Park or you'd go into Skokie,
right.
The traditional Jewish areas. Because
right.
Their stores would be open because Christmas was nothing to them.
Exactly right, yeah.
But the great delis were open. And so we'd go and get bagels and bialy and lox and, just have the best breakfast on Christmas. And so it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, those traditions were big. And then my mom would make a big roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. And, that's what we had for dinner. So it was wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of all
the people today that, you know, are planning their Christmas Eve dinners and hopefully with their family. And it's just so much work and fun. And, you know, food is love. That's what I've always said. You know, you feed the ones you love.
Yeah, it's interesting. My, after a certain point in life, and I'm sure you're probably the same way, Cara, is the fact that, you know, your spouse will ask you, well, what do you want for Christmas? It's like, I don't need anything. This year, the awesome Mrs. Sussman and I were talking, and she said, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, well, I already bought it. And she said, what? And I said, I got a new grill. And she's like, that's not a gift for you. She said, that's a gift for me. She said, I don't have to cook. You'll grill. And so it was just delivered yesterday. And I've got to put it together, but that's my big present. So I really am excited like a little kid on Christmas.
Are you doing a tenderloin on the grill?
I'm not sure yet. It's either that or it's going to be a rack of lamb or a prime rib roast. I have not.
Oh, that's a tough call. Yeah,
that's
fun.
So we are looking forward to that. The kids are all excited. You know, I've got young kids at home. I've got an 8-year-old and 11-year-old son and daughter. And so they're obviously very excited. We do the Elf on the Shelf thing, and that's a lot of fun, and you know, the Christmas trees all over the place and decorations, and you know, they're off school right now and just excited as can be, because it's just going to be a huge happy Christmas around here. We're very excited.
Yeah, and us adults, we in our family, we still love the Elf movie. You know,
still
threaten to make pasta with maple syrup on it and all the candy. And you know, it's just like classic one-liners that everybody remembers.
Oh, yeah.
The Steve Martin movie, The Jerk, and
yes.
Elf. Those are our two family go-tos.
That's absolutely. I don't need anything except this thermos.
Yeah.
If you remember that from Steve Martin. Oh,
yeah.
The Jerk is one of the greatest movies. The new phone books are here. The new phone books are here.
Yeah.
You go through the – and the Elf one, that's another one that is just turned into a classic movie.
Yeah,
that my kids absolutely love. And, you know, there's so many adult innuendos in there, but the kids love it too. So
what music do you play during Christmas dinner? Do you guys do a special music?
Usually like a lot of Mannheim Steamroller, a lot of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. We're really into those. Those kind of the modern Christmas stuff. But I still love the old classics that my folks used to play on the hi-fi that we had in the living room. Dad had a whole collection of some of the greats, from Nat King Cole to, you know, Robert Goulet. I'm trying to think of some of the others, Spike Jones, all these great, great Christmas albums that are still classics to this day that, you know, you put them on there and it's just some of the most beautiful music ever.
That's, we have a guest coming up, but this is what I love about his music and who we're going to be playing, because he's got every genre that you just mentioned can be played on this instrument. It's great background dinner music for like Christmas, his Christmas album.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like you hear the words in your head, you want to, you know, sing along, but it's not so distracting as having, you know, Dolly Parton belting out some country Christmas song during your happy talk time with your limited time with your family. So,
right,
yeah, and I know we're going to get to hear some of his Christmas music, but that's a great way to hear all those classics as well.
It absolutely is. And I'm really excited to learn more about this instrument that we're going to hear more about. It's called the Chapman Stick. And we're going to bring in our guest right now, Michael Colewitz, to learn about this unique instrument. Glad you're with us on this Christmas Eve morning. It's just such a great time of year, so beautiful around the city and decorations up, and everybody's just seems to be in a better mood. And I tell you what, if you don't have a soundtrack that you're going to be playing this Christmas at your dinner, maybe for a cocktail party, can I make a suggestion? You follow this guy, Michael Colewitz. He's joining us right now. Great artist around Sedona, and he is a pioneer player of an instrument called the Chapman Stick. Michael, welcome. It's great, glad to have you here.
Good morning. Good morning, Brad. Thanks for having me, and I'd just like to wish everyone, all your listeners, a very Merry Christmas.
Well, we're glad you're here in kind of a different format today for the Christmas Eve edition of Straight Talk Sedona, and we want to talk to you a little bit about your music and about... We'll get into your Christmas traditions growing up as well, but I'm really interested in this instrument you play called the Chapman Stick. Please tell us more about it.
Well, it's probably one of the most expressive musical instruments ever devised by man. Unfortunately, even though it's revolutionary, it's still very little known. It was invented here in the United States, which very few instruments have been invented in the U.S., by Emmett Chapman in 1974.
Wow.
I met Emmett Chapman in 1976. I was 19 years old, right out of high school. I played the trumpet for 10 years in school bands, you know, jazz band, marching band, To the Colors, Reveille. And I saw Emmett Chapman play this fabulous new instrument at a little college coffee house in Southern California. I was hooked from day one. Chapman was a jazz guitarist, among other things, on the LA circuit in the mid to late 60s. He was kind of known for being willing to experiment with just about anything. And in 1969, the late summer of 69, he started tapping with both hands on his guitar. He wanted to play complicated jazz piano arrangements like Oscar Peterson or Bill Evans, and he wanted to be Jimi Hendrix. It was 1969.
Sure, who didn't want to be Jimi Hendrix, right?
Every electric guitar player wanted to mimic Hendrix, and he found a way to do it. He started modifying his own guitars in 69 through 74. And, you know, he'd add more strings, 8 strings, 9 strings, 10 strings, all kinds of wild bodies, modifications like Mercedes-Benz gear shifters for Wanger bars. I've seen all the pictures of the history, and some of them are pretty crazy. But in 74, he decided he had to build an instrument specifically to accommodate his playing technique, which is kind of unusual. The playing technique came first. He had to develop an instrument to do it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so he came up with a flat fretboard with 10 strings on it, and it's about as long as a, say, Fender electric bass. Mm-hmm. But it didn't have any body because apparently on electric guitars, the body doesn't really contribute anything at all to the tone. Everything is because of the pickup. And he used regular magnetic pickups, same technology as a 1940s electric guitar. And he lowered the strings very close to the fret so that he could just lightly tap the string against the fret. And that would cause just enough sound energy or vibration to be heard by the pickup.
So what let's do this. Let's listen to a little bit of cut number one. This is called Meeting Carlos. This is our guest, Michael Kollwitz, playing the Chapman stick. That track is Meeting Carlos. Any significance to that, Michael Kollwitz?
Quite a bit. About 10 years ago, I was the resident musician under the banyan tree in downtown Lahaina on the island of Maui.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I did that every other weekend for 6 years. My wife and I would be there. I'd play. She'd sell CDs.
There and you go.
Right out of the crowd, here comes Carlos Santana himself.
And no way.
Yeah, I know. I said, that's Carlos. Let's look. Because, nah, it's not. And anyway, he walked up. He threw $100 into my tip jar and then walked up and said, that is beautiful. What is it you're playing? And actually, I was just improvising. So I copped to it and said, well, I was just improvising around these chords. And he had all kinds of wonderful things to say. He told me that I had a gift of the heart and that my music made him feel good the moment he heard it. He signed the back of my instrument. He goes, are you sure you want to do this? I go, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to do this. And he signed the back of my instrument, and we talked probably a good 10, maybe 15 minutes tops. And for the next few days, I just merely floated off the ground 2 or 3 inches. I don't think I actually walked, and I didn't want to wash my hand for a week.
Yeah, I can imagine. But to get that kind of a compliment from a guy who's, you know, one of the finest, world's finest guitarists, that's got to be huge. I mean, what a nice little treasure for you there. And it brought about a great piece of music there. But that really kind of, what's the term I'm looking for? Is a great example of this Chapman stick that you're playing. I've seen videos of you playing, and it's almost like a piano where you're using both hands.
You're absolutely right.
You know, one hand is playing the rhythm, is playing the bass notes. The other's you're playing the tune. It's fascinating to watch, and the sound that comes out is just amazing.
You're absolutely precisely right. Although the Chapman stick is in the guitar family of mm-hmm. stringed and fretted instruments, it's played more like a piano. Each hand can lightly tap out full chords, just like a pianist does. So you can make these gigantic, you know, Steely Dan chords that are almost impossible to make on a guitar. But at the same time, you get all of the expressive qualities of a stringed instrument. Now, what pianist wouldn't like to be able to put heavy vibrato on both chords in each hand at the same time, or bend the notes like a blues guitarist, or slide the notes? All of those things are possible on the Chapman stick, and it's electric. It's wired in stereo, so virtually any pedal or effect in the guitar world can be easily used on the stick. You can just as easily make it sound like Carlos Santana, or you can make it sound like Bach.
That is just amazing, Michael Colewitz. You mentioned Steely Dan. I was thinking about when you were, I was watching a video of you play this Chapman stick. Donald Fagen plays the melodica, which is a reed instrument that is kind of like a piano. It's the strangest thing you ever heard of. It's one of the most unique sounds, and that's what I kind of likened the Chapman stick to. It's like not an instrument you see every day, but the sound it makes is so unique.
The first time I heard the melodica, I thought it was a synthesizer, and
yeah,
studied a little bit more and found out it's a cheap little plastic instrument. You know, they maybe cost $100.
Right.
You blow in it and you play the keys, but it has a super unique tone.
Yeah, it's really something. Let's listen to another cut. This is from Emmett Chapman himself. And first of all, tell us a little bit about Emmett Chapman. You had a chance to meet, know the inventor of the Chapman stick.
Well, like I said earlier, I was 19 years old when I met him. He literally took me under his wing. I bought one of his first instruments, and I took lessons with him off and on for over 10 years. I'll never forget the day that I drove to his home atop Laurel Canyon to pick up my instrument. He's, "Come in." I was like, wow. I felt like this is mad scientist here, you know. But it turns out he's very humble. He's super intelligent. He goes, "Would you like to take a lesson?" I go, "I'd love to." The lesson lasted for 3 hours.
Oh, my.
And when I left there, my head was about ready to explode. So I stopped in the Arby's on Sunset Boulevard before I got on the freeway back to Riverside. And I just wrote down everything I could possibly remember. And that's what I did after every lesson for over 10 years.
Oh, my. That
Emmett
is fantastic.
Chapman was a true genius. He's one of those kind of people that if you meet one person like that in life, consider yourself fortunate, because he thought completely out of the box. He was completely independent. He and his family never sold out to the, you know, big instrument manufacturers, because they'd end up, you know, having it made by robots in Taiwan to get the price point down. And then you end up with a piece of junk. But virtually every single instrument that he created, he touched and set up. And it was just an amazing thing. We had a relationship that lasted all the way up until his death, November 1st of this year. And that's 45 years.
Wow. Are they still going to be able to make the Chapman stick?
Well, I'm happy to say that his daughter, Grace, has taken over the business. She's been working alongside her father for many years. And so, yes, Stick Enterprises in Woodland Hills, California is still up and running. And thanks to Emmett, he knew he was not well. And so in the last 5 years or so, he's done everything he could to make sure that the instrument would continue.
Now, he only made one album called, was it Parallel Galaxy?
That's correct. Yeah, 1985.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of the track Parallel Galaxy. This is Emmett Chapman playing his own instrument, the Chapman stick. This is Cut B. LP titled Parallel Galaxy, Emmett Chapman, the inventor of the Chapman stick. We're joined by Michael Colewitz from Sedona. He plays the instrument, one of the top musicians that is a purveyor, I guess would be a term you could use, of the Chapman stick, a very unique instrument. And you heard the unique sound there. You know, this, as we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, you can play almost anything from, as you said, Steely Dan to Bach, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix. You have really taken this with all the albums you've done and done just a whole lot of different genres of music.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've had, well, I was a latecomer to recording. I was one of Emmett's first students in 76.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really start recording in earnest until the end of the 90s. My very first album came out in 99, 2000. And since then, I've been playing catch up. I've had 30 independent releases. And I have, I have recorded in genres as diverse as, well, I did a lot of traditional jazz. I did Americana, Hawaiian music.
Okay.
Latin flavored music. I've also, and of course, I've been doing Christmas music now. This is actually my third Christmas album. The first one came out in 05. It was titled Frosty the Stickman. But
I like that.
Yeah, it's no longer around. Something about a copyright issue with Rudolph and those reindeer. So all the ones that I'm doing now are all public domain, so I don't have to run into that.
There you go. There you go. Well, you talk about jazz standards and being a guy that was a horn player. That's probably where you get the jazz from. Let's listen to this cut. This is cut number C, an old jazz standard called A Foggy Day. Michael Colwitz, that's a Foggy Day, old jazz standard there. Again, you can really do some wild stuff on this Chapman stick.
Oh, no doubt about it. You can take it places guitars and pianos can't go. The best analogy for the stick that I've ever been able to come up with is, imagine if the guitar and the piano could have a baby. And hopefully inherit the best attributes of each parent, and you would have the Chapman stick. It's portable. It allows, it has a range. The way I have it tuned, the range is about 6 octaves.
Whoa.
Which is plenty for anybody, enough for me. And you get all the expressiveness of violins, violas, cellos, electric guitars, anything with strings. Whatever you can do on a string, you can do on the stick. And at the same time, you can play huge chords in both the bass register with your left hand, like a piano, and then big chords in the right hand on the stick, just like a piano. The only difference is you're just tapping on strings, and the technique is just tap and hold. That's
wow.
It. If you want to get a staccato note, you just tap quickly and let go. If you want it to sustain, you just hold it down. And the same is true with the chords. So it sets you up for beautiful tones and multi-part arrangements that you can do simultaneously with very little effort that just doesn't sound quite like anything else.
All right, so we went from the jazz standard Foggy Day to, let's go to a rock classic. I think everybody will recognize Stairway to Heaven, cut D. Stairway to Heaven, of course, Led Zeppelin classic. So yeah, you can get every genre there is, from jazz to rock and roll. You said Hawaiian music. You've got it all. This is really quite diverse. Now, if someone was going to say, I want to try and learn to play this, how would they do that?
Step one, get an instrument.
Okay.
That's about the hardest part right there. Once you get one in your hands, it's pretty easy. But the instrument never caught on in a big way commercially. So you can go into just about any music store, ask for a stick, and they're probably going to look at you like you're from another planet.
Right.
You're not going to find them in, you know, like Guitar Center or even most of the bigger shops. There have been a few really big shops, maybe L.A. and Los Angeles. Los Angeles and New York, forgive me. That have had a few instruments here and there, but they're typically sold direct to the customers, direct from Stick Enterprises, so they're really hard to find. The hardest part about learning stick is just getting one. The instrument sells for about $2,000 to $3,000 U.S., which is extremely fair considering it's a completely custom-made instrument.
I was going to say all handmade, and here in the United States as well. That's some amazing stuff. Well, you said that, and since this is the Christmas season, here it is Christmas Eve morning on Straight Talk Sedona. Let's hear a little of your Christmas music. This will be cut number E, one of my favorites, A Little Town of Bethlehem. Michael Colwitz on the Chapman Stick, A Little Town of Bethlehem. Christmas music, it's really seems perfect for the Chapman Stick. And you actually are probably going to be playing a lot of those songs tonight, aren't you, Michael?
As a matter of fact, I am. I'll be at the Skyrock Inn in Sedona tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. And I'll also be there next Wednesday, the 29th, also from 6 to 9.
That's fantastic.
That will be a beautiful setting with this full moon and those stars that'll be out tonight. What a great way to listen to the Chapman Stick.
Oh, they have one of the prettiest views in Sedona. The only other property that even comes close is the Sky Ranch Lodge. But yeah, in a lot of ways, I think Sky Rock is even nicer.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
If
people wanted to follow you and know where you're going to be playing and get some of your music, where would they go?
Simply go to my website, which is my name, michaelcolwitz.com, and Colwitz is spelled K-O-L-L-W-I-T-Z, and just click on calendar.
Well, tell me about your upbringing. We were talking earlier, Kara and I were, about Christmas when we were kids. What was your upbringing like with Christmas?
My parents would load us in the car to go drive around and look at the lights.
Nice.
And just coincidentally, Santa seemed to always arrive while we were gone. And when we would come home, oh, look at all the presents. Oh, darn, we missed them again. And for us, it was a big celebration. My parents were Lutherans. And there was a big celebration on Christmas Eve, and kind of like Kara's, except we didn't have seven fishes or anything. We just, you know, a big feast. We'd open a few little presents, and then we'd have to wait the next morning and open all the big stuff. And that's when we had the, you know, wrapping paper flying through the air, confetti being created right on the spot. And, you know, everyone going, I don't have any batteries. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely required. Kind of like your grill.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't envy you having to put one of those babies together. Everyone I ever did was missing a few screws somewhere.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, you know, it's so neat to be able to look back and remember your childhood and your upbringing. And I think every Christmas for everyone, especially as you get older, you start remembering those great times that you had, and you try and fit those in with your family as well. So it's great stuff. But that's so cool that you've got Christmas concerts, holiday concerts, but all year round you're out there playing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm always recording, always playing, always moving forward. And my new thing is I like speaking. So I'm beginning to put together a program of kind of motivational, inspirational talk, weaving my music in and out and stories about the stick. And so if there's any local groups out there that would like me to come speak, we'll just get a hold of me through my website, and I'd be happy to come talk to your group.
That is so cool. And people could learn about the instrument and see how it's played. And that's just amazing. That is great stuff. Let's listen to one more cut, since it is Christmas Eve. Let's listen to cut number F. This is called from the LP, I guess. Do we still call it LP? From the CD, I guess it would be. Santa Plays the Stick. This is I Saw Three Ships, Michael Kolwitz. From the CD, Santa Plays the Stick, Michael Kolwitz, I Saw Three Ships. Michael, that's just amazing stuff. And what great music for the holidays, something different, but something that really just truly brings out that feel of Christmas.
And the nice thing about Christmas music is you get to play it over and over every single year.
Absolutely.
And you can also find him on Spotify. I've got a couple of his Spotify playlists going often through the day, so I enjoy it. Michael, I have one question for you. How did you end up in Sedona with all your travels?
That is a good question. Well, in the last century, I was involved in the two-way radio industry. I had a family to support, and I had mortgages. I always played the stick on the side, and I moved to Scottsdale, Arizona in the late 80s, early 90s, and I took a job with a two-way radio company, and my territory was the entire state. And it just so happens that my customers were all of the forests in Arizona, and there are 6 national forests up here, and that's how I found Sedona. I still remember the day I drove over the mountain, saw it for the first time. I, like many tourists, I just wanted to stop the car, get out, and go, oh my God.
Right.
It was just so dramatic that from that day forward, I would drag up any human being willing to come, relatives, parents, friends, girlfriend, anyone that wanted to come to Sedona for any reason whatsoever. And in the back of my mind, I always thought, someday I'd like to live here. And a little over 6 years ago, we just did it. So here I am. I've been here a little over 6 years.
That's just amazing. And you're right. It's just a breathtaking part of the country. And wow, to think that two-way radios brought you here.
Well, yeah. A little known fact is both Michael and I are in the same ham radio club. We've not met in person, but we know each other as ham radio operators on our weekly check-ins. So that was kind of cool when I discovered that his station number was him. I won't give his station number out.
Well, the funny thing was that when I sold two-way radios, I sold thousands and thousands of radios to hundreds of customers in every type of business and federal, state, local agency. I never owned a single one. And I didn't discover ham radio until just a few years ago. I go, well, this is fun.
You know, it is fun.
I kind of looked down on ham radio operators when I was in the commercial two-way industry because, well, you're not going to get any business. What am I going to do? Sell you a antenna? Whoopee-doo. A battery? That's about it. The customers I dealt with were, you know, large commercial customers and mostly a lot of state, federal, local governments who, the kind of guys that give me a purchase order for 100 radios.
There you go.
I got to tell you. A single one.
The ham radio operators have a special place in my heart. For a good portion of my career, I was a meteorologist on TV. And I worked in a lot of markets where we had a lot of severe weather. And ham radio operators are out there, and they're the ones on the front row, the front lines, letting the National Weather Service know where the storms are. They were kind of the first storm chasers, but they did it just for the good of their own heart and to let the National Weather Service kind of be their eyes out there in the field. And let me tell you, they save countless lives, just the information they provide. And they do that throughout the country. With severe weather. So shout out to all the ham radio operators.
Yeah, ham radio operators are some of the nicest people I've ever met, and they'd be willing to give you the shirt off the back, off their back if it would help you in some way. So, yeah, I agree.
Well, Michael, it has truly been an honor to speak with you this morning. And one more time, give the folks the website where they can get more information about you and where you're going to be playing tonight and next week.
Okay, absolutely. Again, my website is my name. And so just put it, the two names together. It's Michael Kollwitz, KOLLWITZ.com. And if you can just spell my last name and do a Google search, I have a weird last name. I am easy to find. And all of my events are on the webpage. And tonight, Christmas Eve, I'll be performing at the Skyrock Inn here in Sedona from 6 to 9 p.m. in their very beautiful lounge. And I'll also be there next Wednesday night as well from 6 to 9.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy your night tonight. You'll be, giving a little serenade for Santa Claus coming in.
Yeah, well, that'll be anything I can do to get a little something extra under the tree.
There you go. Carol, what's coming up for next week's show?
Well, there's two fascinating people in Sedona. Michael's one of them. The other one is on for our New Year's Eve show. And that is America's favorite UFO tour guide, Michael O. Sedona. So we're doing the UFO show. We're in Sedona. It's one of the most popular UFO tour sites there are.
Right.
And Michael is going to give us the facts and myths and all of the lore that goes with visiting Sedona and seeing, you know, the best viewing sites for UFOs. So it should be pretty interesting. I think it'll be a nice New Year's Eve sort of topic. So we look forward to having him on the show. He's a really great guy, knowledgeable too.
My wife and I went on his tour earlier this year, and it was a real eye opener.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
A good tease. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you very much. Appreciate you being on with us this morning. And next week, my brother Brian will be back. StraightTalkSedona.com or BrianSussman.com. You can get all the information there. Kara, thanks a lot for letting me sit in once again.
We love having you, Brad. You're awesome. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Take care.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Brian Sussman, a CASM Full Service Radio special feature brought to you every Friday morning following the 8 a.m. news exclusively on 780 KAZM. Contact information for producers KRP Sedona can be found at straighttalksedona.com. For Brian Sussman at briansussman.com. Mark your calendar to join us again next Friday at 8:15 a.m. and have a wonderful day.